Welcome to the Going Merry Podcast, the number one One Piece rewatch podcast on the internet. And it is also the number one One Piece thirst podcast because everybody is hot. I just remembered that I was supposed to say that at the beginning of this episode.
Oh, everybody's hot.
Amanda, what does your shirt say?
I thought this might be appropriate. My shirt says, if villain bad, then why hot?
I love it.
Never a more important question has been asked.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Amanda, how are you today?
I'm doing swell. How are you?
So far, so good. Whitney, how are you today?
I'm feeling fast and sharp.
That's
attack.
Okay, I'm caught
sharp
up now.
Sharp as five finger blades.
Yeah, those things. And our friend Betsy was supposed to join us today. However, she is not feeling well, so she was not able to come on. She's going to come on a different week, though. So thoughts out to Betsy. I hope that she gets to feeling better, and we look forward to having her on at some other point to review the live action with us.
Feel better.
Yes, feel better. We'll see you soon.
That we will. So this week we watched episode 3 of the live action One Piece, Tell No Tales. And I'm going to save myself for last because it seems like I have been the one that has been all over the place with this show so far. So we're just going to let the tension build a little bit. Whitney, what did you think of episode 3?
I thought that episode 3 had quite a different feel to it than the episodes we've seen so far. I like that it was kind of creepy, like light horror, psychological thrillery, on the lower end of that spectrum, obviously, but it still gave us a lot of creepy feels to it, which with the introduction of Clawdor, I thought was super important because we had a really big discussion about him watching the anime and how if you really imagine him in real life, he was very, very diabolical, right? He was a very creepy, psychotic person.
Mm-hmm.
And at least I thought was one of the scariest villains we had had, not in strength per se, but more in his cleverness and his planning and his willingness to cut down anybody that got in his way, even his own crew in the anime that we saw. So I really liked the feel. I thought the mansion looked really interesting. It had like a weird cinematography going on with the colors and the camera angles. And of course we got to meet Derek's favorite character of One Piece.
That fuck.
The great Captain Usopp.
Yeah. Amanda, what did you think of this episode?
I liked this one a lot. I also agree with Whitney. I liked how this felt a little bit different than the past couple of episodes that we've had. And it was kind of cool that it was all contained for the most part within the giant house. And then I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later when we get more into the episode, but the containing it into the one location is a little bit different from this arc in the anime, but I thought that it was a good way to do it just because they had to speed things along here. But I didn't think it took anything away by not, you know, stretching it out too far or setting it in various different locations in the town.
Absolutely.
And we got to meet all sorts of new people, which was great. And I like Usopp here.
We gonna do
shit. Now.
This version of Usopp is
likeable.
Yes.
He's
a little different.
I know.
Which is what Derek said he's gonna hate more than anything else in this whole show.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still correct. I kind of like him too, and that's why I know the character is done poorly because of the fact that I like him. I fucking loved this episode. Really, really enjoyed this episode.
Finally.
I think it's my favorite episode that we've watched so far. One was really good, but I really enjoyed this episode. Just the little conversations and the little moments that were happening throughout this episode, I was just smiling ear to ear because I was just loving the conversations. I was loving the relationship building and the character building throughout it. We can get more into some of them. But I really liked the way that they were doing this episode as far as, because I was not a big fan of Syrup Village, as Whitney and Amanda have already said several times in the anime. I did not like Syrup Village, especially because Usopp was there, and I was really upset with the fact that we were getting there because of the fact I knew Usopp was coming. And I, so
Usopp is coming.
Yeah.
That's a very, very important question.
Okay.
How do you pronounce the word Syrup? Say it again.
Damn it, now you're gonna make me overthink it.
Just say okay. That village.
Syrup.
Or maple.
Syrup. Yeah.
Syrup.
Yeah, like,
Amanda, how do you say it?
Maple syrup. Kind of halfway there.
Syrup. Yeah. Okay, I say syrup.
Okay.
So we have the whole spectrum going on here. Oh, no, yeah, I say scissor.
What?
Oh, you're too young for that one.
Baby. You little baby. Listen to some Lil Wayne.
No. I do have.
He doesn't know about the lollipop. Okay, go ahead.
Do you know about green and yellow?
Green and yellow?
Yes.
I know about black and yellow.
You know about black and yellow.
My least favorite team in the NFL, secondly.
It's one that that he did a cover on, except he changed it from black and yellow to green and yellow. And it's a song done
for
that,
the Packers.
Yes. from the 2010 Super Bowl was when he wrote it. And it's absolutely fantastic. I love that song. I jammed to it in the car. Yeah. And it's
that one up.
It's the only song of his that I have. It's a great song. But it's also extremely dated because he does a lot of player references that no longer play anymore. Yeah, good song though. Very catchy.
Bring back Lil Wayne.
Yeah. Let's see. I know I was kind of interrupted. Oh, well, we can get into the rest of it as we go. That's fine. No big. I don't know where I was at. It's okay.
It was an important question.
It was an important question. You're absolutely right. It was worth the interruption. The bells chime as a young Usopp sprints through town, warning the townspeople. After repeating that every day for years, the villagers just plain ignore him now. As the Straw Hats sail across the open seas, the boat begins taking on water. Even though Nami and Zoro still deny they are a crew, Luffy decides his first order as captain will be to find a new ship to make the trek to the Grand Line. Elsewhere, Helmeppo and Kobe practice rigging Garp's ship, though Kobe has much more experience from Alvida's ship. Amanda, we'll start with you. What were you feeling at the beginning of this episode? Did you like how they did the with Usopp running through town and everything?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was a good backstory for him because I don't remember if we've seen him as a kid in the anime that exactly. I mean, I know they kind of go into his backstory, so he must have at some point.
They did for like a minute right at the end of the arc. It was literally like as they were pulling away on the ship because they showed it with his mom being sick and everything.
Right. Yeah.
That was when Kaya gave Whitney's favorite line.
Yeah. That didn't happen. We'll doctor. Save it.
I
thought it was a good way to show that he has been that way since a kid, telling grand old stories and all that kind of thing. Because the anime arc is a lot longer, so we're able to see that's his nature throughout a longer period of time, but I thought that was a good way to do it this time. And I liked how the town looked. It looked kind of like if you've been on the parts of the Caribbean ride, it's like kind of brown and a little bit dark, and there's like torches that are giving ambient lighting and that kind of thing. So it kind of looked like that, which was cool.
It did. It reminded me of Tatooine from Star Wars, honestly.
Oh,
like
God.
Just a little bit.
The sand gets everywhere.
Yeah.
I hate sand.
I don't like sand.
It's so coarse.
Sand and syrup together. It's a nightmare.
Ew, that does sound gross. Okay. Whitney, what do you think of this episode? Or at least this first
intro.
Bit. Yeah,
yeah,
all that.
I like how quick it was, and it, like Amanda said, it explains so much very quickly. We see this kid and we're like, what is he doing? Oh my God, pirates are coming. And then you see it over and over, this quick loop, and you're like, oh, he's full of shit, right? And then you see him grown as an adult, and it's like they're sick of his shit, right?
Yeah.
So you can tell very quickly, okay, this guy is important somehow, and they condensed it down in a good way. What I liked about his story, I seemed to understand more about why Usopp is the way he is in this episode more than I did in the anime, because we see, this is later, but like we see Kid Usopp talking to his mom and know that he told her stories, right? These fantastic stories. And he does this with Kaya also. And it's like, maybe he's not just on this ego trip full of shit guy. He's doing it because he feels like he's doing something good for these people that he cares a lot about, right?
I feel like you're giving him too much credit. Go ahead.
I felt the exact same way.
can you kind of understand, like, his mom was on her deathbed and his father was gone, a fantastic pirate, which we know to be true. And it's just like, well, maybe he grew up doing this and just gotten so much of the habit that this is where he is now. This is part of who he is as a person. And yeah, it's annoying, especially if you just meet him or you're trying to do something important and he's just lying out his ass all the time. But it kind of made me feel more emotion towards him that wasn't animosity.
I will say he lies less in the live action than he does in the anime. Absolutely.
And it's like little things. It's nothing super.
It's extremely outlandish in the anime. In the live action, it hasn't been that bad.
I don't know. He did talk about slaying a dragon.
I mean, he did talk about the dragon and the goldfish. And I'm trying
he
to.
He included the goldfish. I love
he
that
did
part
the
of the
goldfish.
Anime.
And I think that was really it as far as like his just really bad outright lies.
You know what I did like a lot was the Luffy's Jolly Roger that he made.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot, as the more I watch this one live action, the more I realize I've forgotten a lot of stuff. As far as was that in there or not, I don't really remember, but I do remember the Jolly Roger and how bad it looked. And I like that they included that because he has such heart and he's thinks he's doing something really awesome. And of course, Nami has to low blow and be like, you're not putting that on my ship. Well, who said it was your ship, first of all? But
she said boat. And I was actually really proud of her for saying boat because it is technically a boat, not a ship.
It is a small boat. Yeah.
It's yeah.
It's leaking water pretty terribly.
I've gotten into arguments with people over boat or ship, especially about the Mary, because it gets kind of confusing. And like, it kind of looks like a ship. So is it actually a ship? No, it's a boat. Anyway,
it's a mast issue, right? Is that what we decided? We
yeah, it's like a number of masts.
Masts.
Yeah. All yeah.
This is a very important hill to die on.
It is, yeah. Because I think the Mary has two and a ship has three or more. So, yeah. And I think Nami's boat only has one. I think. So.
I think so.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I was very proud of her for using the proper term there. I was like, yeah, you did not call it a ship. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
I like that Helmeppo was cut down to size pretty quick here because it's still pretty early of them being Marine cadets, and he's full of himself, right? Because he's Axan Morgan's son and he thinks he's going to have an easy go of it. And we find out pretty quick that Kobe's pretty useful and he's pretty knowledgeable, at least for the work they're doing right now, which is grunt work, right? It's all the maintenance work and the taking care of the ship and tying knots. And I just thought that was really funny, that Garp's like, immediately, like, I don't give a shit who your father is, right? So that was pretty nice. I like to see him treated that way.
I mean, yeah, it's like it's taking him down a peg for sure.
Yeah.
I really did not have a lot of notes at the beginning of this. Like, I did, because I did like the scene where the when Usopp is running through town and he like stops and talks to the guy for a second. And the guy is like sitting there explaining to him, and he's like, look, you're growing up now. You need to cut this shit out. Like, stop. And Usopp just looked at him and smiled, and he's like, the pirates are coming. He's like, I kind of enjoyed that he knew that the guy was right, but he kept up with it anyway and just smiled and blew it off. He's like, that something like that never happens in the anime. Like, he just kind of runs through town with shit being thrown at him, and he doesn't really pay attention to anybody. He doesn't stop and have conversations with them like that. So you never see that interaction or someone actually calling him on his bullshit, like right to his face in a calm conversation. You only have them screaming at him from a half mile behind saying, knock it off or whatever. So I did like that little conversation there. I really enjoyed Kobe being the one, like, kind of getting the one up on Helmeppo, because in the anime, when we have seen it, they're more on equal footing, like, for the most part. Like, neither one of them is really good at anything, honestly. And so it was interesting to me that they're already kind of showing Kobe pulling a little bit ahead there, in which I'll talk more about that later. But I mean, you know, this particular part, while I did like pretty much all of my quotes are from the beginning of the, like, the first half of the episode. We're not quite there yet, but yeah, the beginning was good.
All right.
The crew arrives in Syrup Village, a small town known for their shipbuilding. While they agree that a new ship is needed, Luffy and Nami have different opinions on exactly how they are going to obtain said ship. As he strolls through the port, there she is, the boat of Luffy's dreams. While looking at the boat, the three meet Usopp. While Usopp works there, he's not able to sell them the boat. Instead, he offers to introduce them to his rich friend that owns the whole shipyard. Back in Orangetown, a fishman shows up to tell Buggy he has a meeting with Arlong. Buggy tries to refuse, but the fishman takes him out easily. So, I really liked the kind of connection growing with Nami and Zoro here. And, like, I'll get into a little bit more of it later, because I do think there are multiple connections that happen in this episode, even multiple different kinds of connections. But the understanding that was starting to form between Nami and Zoro was like, okay, like, Luffy's going to want to do things his way, but they're not all necessarily that realistic. So what are we actually going to do? And, like, you know, they were just, it was fun that they were finally starting to realize that it's mostly them that needs to be the ones to take certain actions and to, in order to seriously move them along in certain ways that Luffy just doesn't quite seem to understand from their perspective, I guess. Because, I mean, we kind of see later that Luffy's already making some headway and how exactly he was saying he wanted to go about it. But I did really like the small conversations that were happening at the beginning between Nami and Zoro there. Luffy gives a great speech on why they are going to get their ship the right way and not steal it. I absolutely loved that. And what I loved more was Nami's reaction to it. And she's just continuing to learn that Luffy is not the average pirate. And this particular part felt like the most impactful argument toward that we've seen yet. Like we kind of already talked about last episode, the whole thing with him setting the townspeople free, I didn't think was necessarily that impactful. Like, don't get me wrong, I understand that it not all the pirates would do that, but going way out of his way like this, especially if he was a rich pirate and he could just afford to buy a ship, sure, whatever, buy it, you know, then it wouldn't be like, don't get me wrong, it's still a big deal to buy it instead of steal it if you're a pirate. But Luffy doesn't even have money, so he's having to go even further out of his way to get a ship the right way. And I really liked that conversation and the reactions from Nami with that conversation. Actually, I wrote down, so because Luffy mentioned, he said, a ship is not just a ship. It's a part of our crew. We need to find the perfect one, and we are going to get it the right way. And I absolutely loved that. I really hate that the first thing I'm saying about Usopp is positive. The line that he had here talking to the other three. Whitney, what was that?
My screen just got really bright and I look like a spoopy ghost.
Okay. the line that he gave the other three, I really, really liked. It was, I'm a chief technician in charge of incrustation removal and aviary waste eradication. And
I love that.
So I was like, he scrubs barnacles and cleans bird shit.
Yeah.
And first off, I want to know what clean bird shit looks like. Like, I feel like all of it's dirty if it's shit.
He just like, I think he cleans it off
the boat. Oh,
okay.
What? Come on now.
But I really liked that line from Usopp. I thought it was really funny. So this is kind of, I am curious from someone that hasn't seen One Piece before, what they thought of this fish man that we meet in this episode. Like, from looking at him, is that your instant thought? Oh yeah, this guy's half fish or whatever. Like, I just, and I'm not saying there was anything wrong with the design, I'm just saying from the way it was done, I don't necessarily know that you would pick it out. Like, he definitely looked like some sort of monster, but I don't know that Fishman is what popped into the head, you know?
Well, he looks like a shark, so I don't know if I would call him fish.
I mean, a shark is a fish.
Well, I would say shark, though.
Okay.
Because, I mean, and he has a big fin in his back.
See, and that's not near as prominent, I don't think, in this as it is in the anime. Obviously, it's more prominent in the anime. Everything's more prominent in the anime, but yeah, in the anime, obviously, it's pretty obvious. It's cartoons. They can do shit like that to make it more obvious. But yeah, in this one, I was like, I don't necessarily know that he looks fishman-like. Anyway.
Are we talking about Arlong, or are we talking about his henchman?
We're talking Kurubi, the one that initially comes to see Buggy.
I feel Oh, sorry.
That's okay. He might be a little bit less sharky looking than Arlong.
Yeah, and they all look so different from each other anyway when we finally see them later. But like, I don't know if I didn't know who he was. I obviously did when I first saw him, because he had such a big role in the anime. But he did look monstrous. He didn't look like a human. So I don't know that somebody would have immediately say that's a fish of some sort or a shark, but they may have said, because I feel like I had to explain to my husband. He's like, well, who's that? What's that? And I was like, that's a fish man. He's like, what? So,
okay.
You know,
so that clears it up. Yeah.
He's pretty face blind when it comes to actors and things like that, recognizing them. So, you know, I don't know if he would recognize it anyway. It's very obvious. So, but I, you know, it's kind of dark in that scene too, right?
It is, because it's in the tent.
Yeah, so I think we'll get a better look at him. Hopefully, it'll be more clear.
I did like that Kirby laid Buggy out really freaking fast because like the straws just kind of had some trouble with Buggy. Like they did a little bit. And then in comes this guy who's again serving someone else. Like his boss is even more intimidating, obviously. Otherwise, this guy would be the boss. But this guy lays Buggy out, no problem. So it was, and I liked that they showed that. Like, sure, they might have just taken this guy out, but they're not ready to take on the big fish yet. So I liked that they're kind of showing it's still got a ways to go here, even if it's like in a third party sense. But I will let someone else talk now. Whitney, what did you think of this section with the Mary and everyone arriving to Sir Village and all that shit?
I think seeing the Mary was really cool. I thought it looked really, really good.
It does.
A lot bigger than I imagined it would be, like
That's what
just
she said.
yeah, that is what she says. So a lot like the masthead with the sheep head or whatever he is was way bigger than I imagined. And so it also had my favorite quote of the show, which is so fucking stupid, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but Luffy's walking up to the masthead and he's touching it and he's like, "Oh, I don't remember what he says, like you're beautiful or something like that." And then you hear Usopp's voice, but you can't see him. And Luffy says, "You can talk." And I don't know. It got me. Just little simple things like that with Luffy. He's
They do a
so
lot of
adorable.
little simple shit. I love it.
I
I
know. He's
like the
so
little things.
adorable. So adorable. I don't remember if Kaya owning the shipyard was in the anime. I don't know if it was explained why she was rich or it was kind of.
I don't know, so because we didn't actually see any boats or ships at any point.
So it's maybe just a little bit
I
of
think it's a live action thing because
backstory.
we never see any sort of marina or anything like we did here. And I'm trying to remember if they ever mentioned Kaya owning a shipyard. Obviously, she was
Right.
really rich, but I don't know that they ever explained how she got there. So
I don't either.
I think this is more a live action thing.
As far as the fish man, Kurubi?
Yeah.
Kurubi. No, because we are familiar with his look and what he looks like, I think they did a pretty good job.
They did.
I think it's fairly, I'm not a CGI professional or an effects professional, but it seems to me like it's pretty practical almost all the way around his look. I'm sure there's some parts that are computer generated, but I feel like for the most part, it's pretty practical. And I like that. I think practical effects do a lot for things like this, for characters who need to look non-human and also be on camera a whole lot. Because again, I'm not a huge CGI critic. I think it is what it is at some point, but I like that we didn't have to push through that in particular with the fishmen, at least, because there's so much CGI anyway with the nature of this show. But yeah, I thought it was very interesting that he made such quick work of Buggy, because Buggy has just recovered from this big fight he had. You can see that he's still opening chests to recover parts of his body. So he's probably pretty tired anyway, and he's angry, obviously, because I think he throws something at Kirby, maybe
Yeah,
a
I think
sword
he
or
throws
axe.
his fist.
He
I
throws
think it's,
something, yeah.
yeah.
And he just easily like palm punches Buggy across the tent very easily. So and he's a forbidden what do you call it? Foreboding? No. Just his look is kind of scary,
Intimidating.
intimidating. Yeah. Like he's gonna be something I think that we're gonna have to reckon with later on. So I think that they made a good choice of him coming in here. I don't think that happened. I don't know that he ever dealt with the fishmen. I could be wrong in the anime.
Buggy in the anime?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
So I think it's interesting that they decided to tie that together so quickly, because in the anime, it took us a very long time to get to the fishman. I feel like,
we didn't see the first one until I think episode 31.
So was that, it was after,
it was at Arlong Park. That was like our first episode. Yep.
So that's pretty early that they decided to introduce these guys, but I feel like that's important because it kind of makes you think, who's going to be the big bad, right? There's going to be baddies every week, most likely, like villain of the week style, but there's going to be a big bad, right? And so introducing this guy and later on Arlong, I think, was kind of their way of saying, remember these guys, they're going to be very important near the end of the series. So, but yeah, I thought he looked pretty good. The ships look, I mean, I was happy with all of this.
Okay. Amanda, what did you think of this section?
I liked seeing the Mary. That was a nice little introduction. I wasn't expecting to see it right away because that wasn't exactly how we got introduced to it before. And I did like that line that Usopp gave with the, you know, super elaborate description of bird shit cleaner.
I know. It was so funny. Moving. It was great.
Because, I mean, that's like an example of where he's bending the truth, but it's not bad. Like, because we all do that. Like, if you do a resume, that's what you're going to do. You're not going to say, I clean stuff. You're going to say you're like a waste eradicator or some shit like that. So, I mean, it's things that everybody does. So it's not something totally out of control that you're like, this, come on.
He didn't lie. Calm down, guy.
Yeah, because right? He wasn't like, oh, I own this entire place and this is my ship and blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing.
Have you ever seen the movie She's Out of My League?
Like a long time ago.
Who's in that?
I don't know any of the actors.
Is that one of those like late 90s, early 2000s movies?
It feels like it's Amanda Bynes movie or one of those. Or
it's
where there's that movie, a dude can play soccer or something.
Oh, yeah. That's the man. Yeah, that's She's the Man.
Oh, yeah.
So in She's Out of My League, so that movie kind of cracks me up because the first 10-15 times I watched it, it was fine. It was kind of funny, like it had its moments. But then there was one time I sat down and watched it, and I don't know why, it was like all of a sudden every joke started landing. And so I was literally busting up laughing watching this movie that I had already seen 20 times. I knew all the lines were coming, but it's all of a sudden they were like hitting different. Anyway, so it's like a lot funnier to me now than it used to be. But there's a line in there where like the girl is dating like the main character or whatever, and like her parents ask him what he does. And he works in TSA. And she's like, oh yeah, he's in aviation. And he looks at her, he's like, what? He's like, you can't say that. That's like saying the guy that cleans elephant shit is in show business. No, he's the elephant shit guy. So anyway, that's kind of what that reminded me of.
Yeah, he's just talking himself up. That's okay. We all need to do that sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you continue, Amanda, before my long
where spiel. Did we stop with this scene? I forget.
Bird shit. You were
so
talking
after about, like, right. So after that,
we stopped after Buggy hit Kurobe. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought Kurobe looked fine as well. He looked creepy.
Yes.
And I don't remember if initially I could tell which one he was. I did forget everybody's name, like all of Arlong's henchmen's name for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All that matters is Hachi. That's it.
Oh yeah, octopus guy.
Yeah, so I mean, I knew he was like one of those three henchmen guys, at least. And again, good to see Buggy here. Interesting to see Buggy. Wasn't quite expecting that in the interaction with.
We've already Kirby. Gotten much more Buggy in the live action than we did.
We
in the
have, anime. Yeah, but it's
for sure.
It's It's been an interesting change because, I mean, yeah. It hasn't bothered me.
No, it hasn't been distasteful at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think he fits in fine because it seems like the way that they're kind of aligning these villains together, and it seems like they're aware of each other and maybe they're working together. We're not really sure, but it's an interesting take on it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm really curious to see where it goes and like if Buggy continues to be in it for the, you know, a large remainder of the live action, because like we talked about in the anime, he's already pretty much gone by now until a later point. But all of the events that I am guessing we're going to be going through in the live action so far, it's going to be interesting if they do throw Buggy in there, how are they going to do it and what's it going to be like? So yeah, that's I'm curious to see what they do with Buggy still being in here.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I know.
Was this scene when Usopp said that the shipyard was owned by his best friend in the world?
Yes.
Hear that? I kind of like his style a little bit. Like, I like that he's a little funky, right? Like, when he talks, he's a little, I don't know how to explain it, but he's...
The actor's doing a good job.
He is. I like
he's
the actor.
Charming. I don't know if you guys saw this, but they did, like, they're really promoting this. So they're putting like, the social media accounts are putting out clips, like, every day of different behind-the-scenes things, and they showed all of their audition tapes, like, little clips of them. And his was so funny because he just like started it out as he like gasped and looked at the camera like he was surprised that it was there, and that started his audition.
How cute is that?
Yeah.
I saw one the other day where Nami's actress and Sanji's actor were playing Guess Who, but with One Piece characters. And she was like, would your person be considered a daddy?
And he said no, and it was totally
it was like, yes, he is. Everybody's daddy.
I wish that person was actually Daddy Masterson. That would have been so funny.
Who?
Huh?
Who?
You already forgot Daddy Masterson? Daddy the Father?
Oh, Daddy the Father. I didn't remember that was his last name. I do remember Daddy the Father. That'd be so cool.
I love Daddy the Father. If you can find that clip, I would really like to see that. You should send it to the group, and we can post it on Twitter too, so everyone else can see it. Because that sounds really funny. Yeah, I really like
Daddy
those
one
clips.
Or the. I mean, both of them are good, but.
I mean, yeah, we could post both of them. Yeah, works for me. Okay, y'all ready to move on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Garp's office, he asks Kobe about his experience that he gained with Alvida. He pulls out a game board that was hidden in his office. In Surf Village, Usopp arrives at Kaya's house with Luffy, Nami, and Zoro. To say he received a warm welcome from the staff there would be a lie. Kaya, however, is thrilled to see him. Klahador begrudgingly agrees to let the four stay for dinner when Kaya makes the request. Usopp sneaks into Kaya's room to give her a rock for her birthday. He then spends some tall shit about goldfish poop. The other three are in a massive walk-in closet full of clothes trying to figure out what to wear. Zoro seems to recognize the butler, but Nami shoots down the idea quickly. Luffy and Nami decide to bet on whether or not Luffy can get Kaya to give them the ship he saw in the port earlier. Amanda, we'll start with you. What did you think of all these scenes?
So I kind of liked again that we moved things along and we brought the whole gang to Kaya's house this time because we didn't start out that way. They were a bit separate in the beginning. Klahador, oh my god. The casting, again, incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they found this guy, but he sounds, like his voice sounds just like the anime, the dubbed version.
Yeah.
Like the cadence and the pitch of his voice, it's like so fucking creepy. This dude's so creepy. And his outfit matches.
On IMDb, his name is Alexander Maniatis.
Mm-hmm.
Super hot.
Hi. Is villain bad, then why hot?
Jesus, what is happening? Sorry, I interrupted.
Is he shredded?
No, you're good. Is he bald-headed?
Is it like a shirtless picture with him just absolutely flexing?
Ew. He's in like abs. A totally yes. black suit, and he's got his hands crossed, like his fingers kind of, you know, intertwined in front of his body. And he's got these eyebrows for days. They're so good and angled. And just,
if he doesn't have an 8-pack, it's disappointing.
Yeah, he's going to have that natural V.
I'm glad we're diving in on this one here. Well, whatever.
But yes, anyway. He's great.
Sorry, Amanda.
Yeah. No, you're good. He's just so creepy. Like right off the gate, you can tell something's a little bit off with this guy. And let's see. Kaya, of course, sickly as she is in the anime. Poor thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think we ever saw her like outside of the house before, or at least maybe we did at the very end of that arc in the anime, well, but she's outside now.
Toward right? the end of the arc we did, because she like goes to meet them in the beach with at the right. beach when all the shit's going on. But yeah, that's the yeah. first time she actually walks out of the house.
Mm-hmm. And then we also see they brought into this contained setting Zabuchi and Sham.
Yes.
Which they didn't work in the house before, but now that's their kind of cover.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool, and they also look great. Sham looks incredible, which I also didn't quite, I was like, I know them too, but I had to think back a little bit, because in the anime the Sham character is a male character, and they've mm-hmm. flipped it here, which is perfectly fine. I think she looks great. Her hair is really cool.
He was so fabulous. He was colorful, and yeah
the hair was like spot on, super mm-hmm. like yeah. looked the same.
Great.
And then, yeah, we see Usopp. This was also an interesting change. I was wondering why they did it this way, but I guess because they were already in the house. We don't see Usopp, like, sitting on the tree that's outside of her window, because that's how we do see him in the anime, is mm-hmm. when he's telling her all these stories. When he comes to visit her, he's sitting on the tree outside of her window. So this is, like, slightly different, but I think it's fine. It's probably just logistical, like, they are already inside the house, so it doesn't make sense for him to be on a tree now.
Yeah, it absolutely works the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I think, like Whitney was saying earlier, the way that he is portrayed here and how he's telling stories to these people, like to his mom who is sick and to Kaya who's sick, it really came across like he's doing it for their benefit, because he knows that his outlandish stories make them laugh, or it makes them entertained, or whatever it is. And so it's less of a ego boost for him, but it's more of like a, they need some story time to forget their whatever they're going through at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Oh yeah, it was interesting that Zoro said that he thought that he saw him before.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked the slow build to that. And Zoro's like, I swear, I've seen this guy before.
Mm-hmm. And then that whole scene of them, like, getting dressed and stuff was really funny. Because mm-hmm. he was like, I'm going to wear something black. Like, my man.
Yeah. Whitney, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was really good, because they make it pretty clear when they sneak into the garden, because we don't know any different, right? That we just think, oh yeah, that's his best friend. They're going to visit her. And they make it very clear very quickly that Usopp is not really welcome at this house by anybody other than Kaya, right? Because as soon as he sees, Sham and the other guy, they're like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, we need to go around the back. And so I like that they made it very clear that maybe he was lying about him being super welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else notice anything peculiar in the garden? A sculpture, maybe?
Oh.
No.
I'm not super fond of. Anybody?
Was it a panda?
It was a panda.
Oh.
Damn. I gotta
go. Damn, back I wish look. I would have noticed that.
Yeah. It took me a couple times to catch it, and I actually saw it on a YouTube video that I was watching other people watch it on, and they were like, oh cool, look at the panda. And I was like, what? And so I actually went back and saw it, and I was like, that's cool for pandas.
That's cool for pandas. Them. Good for you that you can get on screen.
They suck. But the only kind of panda that I like is the garden sculpture panda. Yeah, big change with the Black Cat Pirate crew here. Didn't mind it at all. I thought they did a really good job. They seemed very bitter in their position, understandably. It seems like they've been there a while. And as a maid and a chef, I think he was a chef, but I guess they probably just shared responsibilities. Because I'll be honest, this whole thing in the anime with the big beach fight and this giant crew that Kuro was going to kill wasn't my favorite part. It was kind of long and drawn out. I did like the two pirates we talked about from the anime that they changed. I did like them and that big fight, but the rest of it was kind of drawn out for me. So this was a change that I kind of appreciated. It gave us less people to focus on, which I feel like is important in a live action. I really liked that they included the goldfish story. I mentioned that already because I remember loving that in the anime, that it was just a big pile of goldfish shit. And finally, Claudor looks wonderful already. And I feel like even a person who has never watched One Piece or knows anything about it would immediately be able to tell that there's something up with him. At the very least, he's kind of an asshole, right? Because he very, very obviously does not want Usopp there for some reason. There are two things that happen in this episode that I don't understand that seem very unlikely to me. Okay. And one of them is here. I cannot imagine how Zoro did not recognize Kuro unless he looked vastly different when he was practicing as a pirate. He alludes to that he recognizes him, but I'm like, does he really not know one of the most infamous pirates in the world? But part of that may have been because he's supposed to be dead, right? Axe Hand Morgan talks about how he killed Kuro of the Black Cat Pirates. And if you remember in the live action, when they open the safe, there's a rolled up wanted poster with the name Kuro on it. And it took me two or three times to notice that. Because I remember telling my husband when he watched it for the only time, I was like, do you see? Look at that. That's important. But I didn't explain it to him. I was just like, see what that says? He's like, Kuro? I don't know. But of course, he's only on this episode, I think, or maybe okay. one more after that. So he may not have realized that yet. But I don't know. I feel like Zoro knows his pirates. And I'm like, how did he not know? But I guess good storytelling, foreshadowing here. It didn't ruin anything for me. I was just like, really? He didn't know? But
yeah, so one thing, Kuro's, I mean, at least maybe they'll make it different in the live action, but as far as anime purposes go, Kuro's definitely like a smaller known pirate. Like, he's well known in the East Blue, but if you go anywhere outside of the East Blue, nobody knows who the hell he is.
Well, what was his bounty though? Because we see his
it was like 15 million.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was bigger for some reason.
Which I think it was 15 million. Okay. And that's the interesting thing, because we never get his bounty in the anime. They never showed it to us, because I mean, he was already dead. There weren't any wanted posters out there for him at that point in time. Which it makes sense that Morgan would keep that as his treasure, you know, like to kind of remind him of the great thing that he did, bringing down Captain Kuro, the man of a thousand plans, Captain of the Black Cat Pirates, all that fucking bullshit. Yeah. Anyway. His collar was bothering me too, because like one side was just slightly higher than the other, and I was like, man, that's that meticulous is not going to let his collar be uneven. Anyway, continue.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, all good except for that one little thing, which isn't even a bad thing. I just put it out, but still good.
Okay.
None of that bothered me too bad.
I really liked how they did Shaman Butchie. In this, I thought they looked great, and I realized it right before it was them too, because I wanted to know how they were going to do them. I figured they were going to have to put them in the live action in some way, but like they basically looked like half cat people in the anime. So I was like, I don't think they'll be able to do that in the live action. Maybe. But how they did it, I loved it. Like, Sham looked great. Butchie looked great. And it's kind of funny because, like, in the anime, Butchie on one side of his face has like a massive black spot, like a cat, over one eye. And if you look really close in the live action, you can see it. It's still there on his face. It's just like a faded black spot that almost covers a whole quarter of his face, like the anime. So it's really, I really liked that they even kept that little thing in there. It's not as prominent as this first scene when we see him like out in the light, but whenever it's in the cellar later, you can see it a lot easier. So I really did like that. I really like Kaya a lot more in the live action than I do the anime. She definitely feels, this is going to sound stupid, she feels more real. She's real. She's not a cartoon in this.
It feels like she has a little bit more, again, terrible to say this, but more brains. Like, she just seems like she's a little bit more, like, conscious of herself and what's happening.
Yeah, and that was... Yeah, and that was actually my note. In the anime, she seems extremely innocent and kind of ignorant to the world. And she seems like she actually believes Usopp's bullshit that he's constantly telling her. And in the live action, it's kind of more clear. She understands he's full of shit. She's just listening to it for the entertainment. And she's still getting a joy out of it, which is what matters. But you can also tell she understands that he's full of crap. She understands what's going on in the world and that there are bad people out there and all that stuff. Like, she comes across more intelligent in the live action for sure than she does in the anime. Because she seems kind of very innocent and stupid in the anime, honestly. Like,
right.
I don't have any issues with Kaya, but yeah, she does.
Yeah, because even with her birthday present that Usopp gives her, like, at first she's like, okay, what are, this? Oh, sure, this is a pearl, okay. Because she's not like, oh wow, what is this like mystical object that you brought me? She's like, okay, sure, it's a pearl.
She's like, it's a rock. Let's see. Oh, I kind of skipped over Garb's office. I really liked Kobe and Garb talking in Garb's office, and Kobe, you can tell, is extremely, he's still extremely on edge with Garb. And he was like that in the anime for, you know, quite a while too that we've seen. And he's still like that with Garb. But here, I really liked, especially Kobe gets really on edge when he's talking about Alvida. You can tell he's worried he's going to get in trouble with Garb for his past. And the things that he was forced to do with Alvida. And I really, really liked this line with Garb, because I think it applies to a lot of people, and it's a great mindset to have, like, to go into, you know, big changes in your life or whatever. And the line from Garb was, "Our experiences don't define us. It's what we have learned from them that matters." And I loved that. Garb is such a badass in this show, I swear. Both the live action and the anime, I fucking love Garb. So
I'm curious about his motives though at this point, because I want to know, because we know that initially he was like, how long have you been working with Luffy? But I feel at this point he realizes that Kobe isn't like a spy for Luffy or anything. He just and he expresses that through that quote specifically and bringing him to his office. But I'm like, does he really like Kobe and want to teach him, or is he using him for something, for some kind of plan that he has? I can't really tell what his motives are at this point. They seem good, but it's like, I don't know. He's also a leader of the Marines and he's going after a pirate. I don't know. I don't know where that is at this point.
Absolutely. I get what you're saying there. And then the other thing, I really enjoyed the Emily Rudd fashion show that we get in the big closet. Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm all for an Emily Rudd fashion show. Mm-hmm. So last week after we recorded, it was like, I think it was on Thursday that he posted it. So Tom posted in a Discord that we're in for the Avengers podcast that all of us are in. And it was a video. It was one of the clips that we were talking about earlier from like the behind the scenes stuff that Netflix was doing to promote, and like all of the corny pickup lines. Did you watch that?
That was so hilariously bad.
Oh, I know, they were terrible, and I watched it 1,000 times because they were so funny.
Beginning was my favorite part when
I know he's like,
actor I'm a, was like, I have a good mouth.
He's like, I'm a great mouth, and then.
Yes, keep going.
Yes, you are. Continue. God, there's something about that guy. Just listening to him talk in real life, I'm just like,
I forgot. Like, I sent you a video, Whitney, of him speaking Spanish. I forgot that him and Iñaki, who plays Luffy, they both speak Spanish, so they can talk to each other.
Lovely.
I realized that I have the same birthday as Iñaki the other day.
What?
Yeah, because I saw something. They were like, hey, did you know you have the same birthday as Gene Simmons?
That was me. Oh, not Gene Simmons. I told you it was the same as Iñaki, though.
Oh, and then I was like, I have the same birthday as Gene Simmons. Did you? <That's funny. laughs>
I'd be happier about one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite one, though, that I share a birthday with is Blake Lively. Absolutely.
Yeah. I share a birthday with Brie Larson. Yes.
All right.
It's my claim to fame. And Julie Andrews.
Oh, that's cool, actually.
I also have Rachel Ray and Billy Ray Cyrus.
Wow, what a lineup.
I know. Gene Simmons, Rachel Ray, Billy Ray Cyrus. Yeah. Blake Lively.
Can we just talk about how, okay, Taz Skyler, the guy who plays Sanji, he is from Spain, which is really cool. He's only 27.
Is he?
He looks a little older.
I think.
Does he not look like 30?
I think that they mentioned that, like, out of the, I think they
Emily
mentioned, like,
Rudd's
out of the.
30. She's the oldest one.
She's the oldest one at 30. And that was what I was just going to say, Amanda. And I was like, perfect. She's my age.
I'm too old for Taz, damn it.
Oh, no. I don't know. I feel like the older you get,
it's fine.
The less. Like, if
still
he was
shooting my shot, let's go.
If he was early 20s, I'd be like, yeah, no. But
true,
God,
yeah.
Taz Skyler, come on. Y'all need to look him up if you don't know what he looks like. If you haven't watched past this episode, like.
There's a lot of videos of him, like, doing taekwondo and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Amanda sent me this video of him through his training process as Sanji. Because at first, obviously, he starts out
small.
Early, because he's probably never done this before. And by the end, I'm just, like, entranced.
He's got a black belt now, apparently.
Really?
Yes, he does.
I mean, they put in enough time, I'm sure, training for this show.
Well, I can't wait until we start talking about Sanji at just some point in the next 4 episodes somewhere.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I apologize in advance.
You're just going to hear heavy breathing from me. Like, what do you think, Whitney? Just...
But yeah, so the video that I referenced with the pickup lines, we shared it on our Instagram, meaning I shared it on our Instagram. All I'm going to say is Emily Rudd sent shivers down my fucking spine watching that video.
Oh, God.
Like, she hit my soul and it wasn't even her lines, because her lines were, of course, dumb as shit. It was the way she was saying them. I was like, oh, Lord.
Somebody had that line, though. Somebody had, like, you're shivering my timbers or something. Was it not her?
No, that was...
Was it Usopp?
Yeah, it was Usopp, because he had the worst fucking lines. He's like, you want to see a treasure? I'll show you my chest.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what? Awful. I was like, yeah, oh, they were so bad. And then I think Sanji, because, like, and I think maybe that's what it was, because I think she was actually, like, trying to, you know, kind of act like she was delivering a good pickup line, and she was, like, putting a lot into her voice and her face when she was doing it, and the guys were just kind of goofing off.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, because, like, you know, Taz Skyler was, he was like, are you an octopus? Could you octopi my thoughts?
Aw, that's so adorable.
It's like, it was bad. It was funny.
Accent. I don't know. I'm sure his accent is just a conglomeration of all the places he's lived and, like, his influences, but he has that, like, occupy my thoughts, like, he has that long O that I love in a British mercy. All right, anyway,
that video popped into my head when I watched that scene. I was like, okay, we got this, Nami. And I thought it was so funny because, like, Luffy's like just chilling in the room. And she comes out from behind the, you know, the whatever the privacy thing.
Screen.
Screen, that works. She comes out from the privacy screen. She's like, so how do I look? And Luffy's like, you look like Nami. And so
cute.
She like just gets really sad and just walks back behind the, you know, the privacy screen. And Zoro comes in, and Luffy's like, what are you going to wear? He's like, yeah, I'm going to wear something black. And Nami comes out, like, a minute later, wearing a black dress. And she's like, okay, how about now? And Luffy says, you still look like Nami. And Zoro's like, I said I was wearing black. And she just gets this straight face look. She's like, I hate you guys.
Perfect. That was fun. That was a cool moment.
Yeah, I definitely laughed at that. I really enjoyed just the.
But she tosses him a gold-ish looking shirt and he likes it. He's like, oh, nice.
Yeah.
He wears it later.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of character development in here for Nami too, because she talks about hating rich people, right? And we start to see this like resentment. We know she has resentment to pirates, but we don't know why. But now we're seeing she also has resentment for rich people. And so where she generalizes pirates as all bad, terrible people, she's also generalizing rich people as all bad, terrible people. Like, they don't think about anybody but themselves and they don't care. They don't get rich by giving stuff away. And listen, Nami, yeah, super rich people, I get it. I get the animosity. But, like, she's learning already that not all pirates are bad. And she's going to learn in this episode that maybe all rich people aren't bad either. And that, I think, is in thanks to Kaya, who, like you said earlier, has a little bit more to her in this show than in the anime.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Bill Gates, friend of the show, Whitney did not mean that when she said that rich people are assholes. So if you want to donate money to us, message me. We don't have a Patreon at this point, but you can, like, we'll make one for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on the show, you coward. That's all that from new rock stars.
That's exactly what it is. I really enjoyed the scene with Luffy here because he's just standing here in this closet and he's looking around and he's already getting a deep understanding of Kaya and what life must be like for her. And because he mentions that standing in the closet and having such a big space and all these clothes. And like you were talking about, Nami was talking about how, oh, rich people don't care and yada, yada, yada. They want stuff just to have stuff, all this shit. And Luffy's like, I think this must be really lonely.
Yeah.
And that is one of Luffy's strong points that I would say, as far as, like, Luffy's a little naive when it comes to the way that the world kind of works, I guess, with how things work in the world and how you're supposed to go about things. But one thing in the anime he's great with, and you can see it here, Luffy has an extremely deep understanding of people. He knows how people think internally, maybe not even in their actual thoughts, but, like, subconsciously, he understands how people work. And and, you know, kind of what they need to hear and what they're going through. He understands it better than anybody. And so I really, really liked that they were bringing that out here in this scene for sure. I was a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are y'all ready to move on to the next one? We talked about that one for a while, which I'm okay with. That was a great section.
Yes. I love this next scene.
Cool. Talking with Kaya in her room, Klahador is obviously very kind, but just very overprotective of Kaya. When he steps into the kitchen with Sham and Butchie, the other side comes out and he shows a serious assholeness to him. Garp and Kobe wrap up their game and Garp explains that this was not just a game. It is a way that Garp is able to get an understanding of Kobe's thought process. He's indecisive and so focused on not losing that it is causing him to lose focus of winning. He knows what he's doing, but he's overanalyzing so much that he is getting in his own way. They play again, but this time Kobe is not only facing Garp, but the clock. Kobe takes the victory, and Garp explains that he needs to apply that same decisive mindset to his career as a Marine. So, real quick, and I'll let you both discuss the episode, not that you need my permission. Do we have any idea what this blue paste is that Butchie is feeding Kaya?
I don't know. It's poisonous.
It looks gross.
I was calling her tea Windex tea earlier because that is also blue.
Yeah.
Very sad.
I feel like they both have to have the same poison in them. Like, I thought I heard someone say something about poison. I was like, oh, they're absolutely poisoning her.
Yeah, well, because he was going to taste it, and then Sham was like, you idiot, you're going to poison yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In our world, isn't some rat poison, like, bright green?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that? Or I think
and antifreeze.
Miracle yeah. Grow is that bright blue. Like, I think of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a nice way, before they revealed that it was poison, when she takes a sip of the tea, and you're like, wow, that's a very unnatural color for tea.
It looked like Gatorade.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a natural color for food or drink, which we have a lot of in our world, too. But, and I think she mentions, like, this is the only thing that makes me feel better. And I can't remember if it's in that scene or elsewhere, but it's like, yeah, is it?
Kind of sounds like a drug, honestly. Like, the only way you can get over the symptoms of not having is to just have more.
Yeah, like your body has become dependent on it at that point, and you can't live without it. And it's very interesting, and it just now hit me that Klahador/Kuro has planned this out, which we know he's famous for making plans to make it last a long time, because he couldn't kill her before she turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he had to very meticulously plan, and even the chef, to not kill her right out, right?
Mm-hmm.
To keep her alive for so long, but I guess keep her weak enough to where she couldn't do anything for herself and she was dependent. So
I'm curious, now that you bring it up, I'm kind of curious how that happened. Like, because Sham and Butchie are obviously working for Klahador specifically. Like, you know, they're a member of his crew. They're members of his crew. Did he just... And he kind of talked about the scene with, and actually it was in here that he was talking about with Kaya about how, oh, when I had nothing, it was so kind of your parents to let me in. Was it that way with Sham and Butchie too? Were they right there with him? And so her parents just hired all three of them?
I assume they came later.
Yeah, I feel like
they died maybe.
Yeah, which like, is it? Are we to understand that he killed her parents somehow, or was responsible?
And
I think so. At sea.
In the anime, yes, he did.
Okay.
I
imagine that he killed them or had them killed, and then was like, Miss Kaya, I'm going to hire a maid and a chef so that we can take care of you.
A new maid and a new chef. Like, I've replaced them because the old ones did bad things or whatever.
Sure.
So, like, I could see that.
Or he just fired them, you know. Mm-hmm.
Killed them.
Or killed them. That's a possibility too.
Savvy sap.
Yeah. Maybe they were on the boat with the parents.
They were on a boat?
Yeah, on the boat or ship. Okay. Whitney, what did you think about all of this as a whole? Like, about this scene?
I want to know what fucking game they're playing.
Yeah, it looked interesting.
What is this? I tried to look at the patterns and I was like, is it checkers? Is it? I don't know.
It reminds me of that game Othello. Did either one of you ever play that?
No, I've read the play.
Is it Othello? Is that the play? I don't think that's a play.
Yeah,
It's a
what?
Shakespeare play.
Derek.
Is it?
It's a
Othello,
very
yeah.
famous Shakespearean tragedy.
Okay. So I was going to say, I know there's something that sounds similar to that's Shakespeare, but I didn't think that was it.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I know there's a Shakespeare play that sounds similar to that, but I didn't think, yeah, I did not think that was it. Yeah, there was a board game that I played when I was little called Othello, and it was like it was almost like a checkerboard, and there were like pieces like checkers, and one side was white and one side was black, and so you would take turns throwing pieces down like that, and then after the whole board was covered, you would flip pieces over to try and like essentially get different patterns in before your opponent could, kind of like a big board of tic-tac-toe, except with black and white pieces. So like you could flip your opponent's piece over. It's like if my color was white and he had black down, I could flip his black piece over to make it white, if that makes sense. So it was similar to this game in like putting pieces out and then having a bunch of black and white pieces all over the board. But that's what it reminded me of.
So I literally just Googled this, and I should have done this before the episode, but I Googled it, and there's a Reddit thread for the One Piece live action, and somebody said it's apparently called Go, G-O, Go.
Like from Knives Out,
That's what it
that's what
says.
they're playing in that
It's an
movie.
old British board game, but then somebody else said it's not from Britain, it's from ancient China. It's about encircling your opponent. So, kind of makes sense if you're a pirate faring culture and you're encircling your opponent. So, it doesn't really say how it's played, but apparently we have a name for it. But
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe
Interesting. Yeah,
it's just something they made up.
that's the game that they play in Knives Out when it's the girl and the old dude up in the attic, and then they're playing, and then they knock the board over, and then it sends one of them upstairs.
Yeah.
And that's how they like figure out that something off happened.
Good
Nice.
old Anna de Armas
I can't remember
butchered that.
anybody's name in that. I was like, this
I
person and the other one. It's been
and Matt is
a
definitely going to
long
correct
time.
me on how I pronounce that.
I think it's Ana de Armas.
Ana
She's from Cuba, I think. So.
Ana de Armas.
Ana de
De
No,
Armas.
it's D, because Matt corrected me. I said day, and
I
Matt corrected me.
thought in Spanish you pronounce the E like E.
Well,
It
you
is
know what,
that way. Because I
Matt,
took some Spanish, but I'm not a native speaker, so I could be wrong. All
just
right, Matt, know it all.
take it up with Matt. He
I
corrected
will
me
take it up with
multiple
Matt.
times.
You just wait. I'm
He
coming for you,
also
Matt.
corrected me and told me it was Lively instead of Lively. I always thought it was Blake Lively.
Did you?
So, no.
I was like, nobody thinks that's Derek. Lively.
Wow, I'm so glad we're
Oh
staying on
dear.
topic here.
Yeah, anyway. I don't
We
even remember what we were talking about. don't either.
were talking about Othello.
Oh, which is a real play from the 1500s.
Maybe you've heard of it.
Maybe.
There was also a movie based on it with Mackay Pfeiffer, and it was called Oh.
Oh yeah,
It's
I remember that.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Whitney.
Fuck you, Derek. Sorry.
Amanda, what about you? What do you think of these scenes?
So this is the poison and then the game bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really weird boxed mashed potato consistency to that blue poison paste, whatever we're calling it. Potato poison paste. It's just
It's
it
fitting.
I mean it almost also kind of looks like frosting if you want to put it on like a funfetti cake or something. It would kind of go with the theme.
Yeah.
But because
Very
the li
thick stuff. It
Because she's eating that as like soup at some point.
Later at the dinner, that's what they give her for soup, and it looks like it's got bird shit on it. I was like, they must have gotten that from Usopp working.
Gross. But yeah. So,
but on the bright side, we know it's clean.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Clean bird shit. But yes, I think, because do we see in the anime them like outrightly poisoning her, or is it just implied?
No, because I remember being very confused about why she was sick.
Yeah, I don't think they ever even mentioned that they had been poisoning her. I think it's just like a sick from depression thing in the anime.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I think this is I like this way a little bit better, I think, because it's more concrete what's happening. And so then as far as that scene with Garp and Kobe, that's kind of turning into like a mentorship role, it appears, anyway, with that kind of lesson that he gives him at the end. I did notice that his snail phone is asleep during this. Its little eyes are closed. So I guess they do sleep like they eat as well.
Little baby. Had to get sleep. I'm going to buy one for Matt and mail it to him.
He's going to like throw the box when he opens it.
I bet they make phones that look like that, like landlines that look like a snail phone that you can pick up like the top of the shell and call someone on.
Yeah, we gotta check Etsy. Somebody's on that already.
Somebody's doing it. You know for sure somebody's doing it.
I'm just like
that.
Waiting for all of the Funkos that are gonna come out from this. Yes. And I wonder if there's gonna be a snail phone Funko. That would be fun.
So. Or at least like a little tiny one.
I think we can definitely check to see. I've looked up all the One Piece Funko Pops, and I don't recall seeing a transponder snail Funko.
I love them.
Well, they're for sure going to make a new line of live action.
Oh, yeah, they will definitely.
Assume. Yeah.
They do have transponder snail. Oh, never mind. Those are plushes.
No.
Okay.
That's still fun. I want one.
Let me see if they have any good characters. Well, I mean, they have good characters already, but I'm talking characters that you would know. Yeah, there's some great ones here, but just nobody you would know yet.
Damn.
I know, that's unfortunate. Okay, anyway, we can move on here. I did really like the board game scene with Garp and Kobe. Like, it was getting to the point where these were my favorite scenes, like just seeing how Garp was interacting with Kobe, and especially because like Kobe wasn't talking a lot. Like I said earlier, he's very timid around Garp. So by playing this game, Garp was getting deep, deep knowledge of Kobe and how he thinks without Kobe even knowing that Garp was doing that, and not knowing that he was giving so much about himself up just in the way that he was playing the pieces and the way he was thinking before he made a move and all that stuff. And Garp is sitting here applying this game and that, you know, that we talked about. And it sounds like based on what Whitney was finding online with Go, it's pretty similar, you know, like it's pretty right up the line of Marines looking for pirates and like, you know, battle tactics and stuff like that. So Garp did a great job applying Kobe's mental, I guess his thought process going through this game and applying it to how he needs to act in an actual battle in a live situation. And the fact you don't have time to be sitting here trying to figure out if the decision you're going to make is the right one. Make your decision and do it. You know, you have to be decisive, because if you're sitting there overthinking it, then it's not going to go well. And Garp already noticed that Kobe was thinking about the right decisions, but he was thinking on it so much, and then he would change his mind and second guess himself. And that's one of the things he said. He's like, you know, don't second guess yourself. Stop it. Make the move. Make your first move. That's the one that your gut is telling you that's the right one. So I really, really liked the all of the scenes that we got throughout this episode with Garp and Kobe and in this game and their conversations over it. And I already mentioned one of my quotes earlier about the experiences and applying what you learn from them and all that stuff. So yeah, are y'all ready to move on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Peachy. As they wait for Kaya's arrival to dinner, Zoro grabs his drink while Usopp feeds Luffy a bunch of bullshit. Nami meets Mary, who handles all of the finances involved with Kaya's shipbuilding business that she inherited from her parents. Nami is absolutely putting the moves on him when Kaya's entrance interrupts. They all move to the dining room, and Luffy is absolutely ecstatic for dinner. Dinner gets off to a rough start, though, when Nami comes to Kaya's defense in a conversation with Clawhador. Usopp tries to kill the situation by deferring to Luffy, but that's just never a smart plan. With the room still in shock at the size of Luffy's balls, it takes a second for Clawhador to interject and end dinner right there. Amanda, we'll start with you. The whole dinner scene here.
Oh, man. Awkward family dinner. For
sure. Who doesn't love it?
Yeah. I did right before this started, when they're all kind of like mingling about, and then Zoro immediately goes for the drink table again.
Mm-hmm.
Black outfit, going for the drink table. I'm all for it.
It was great.
And then he brings it up again, this time straight to Clawhador. He's like, "Do I know you from somewhere?" And he says that he thinks he saw him at the Funky Bar on Mirror Ball Island, and that place, whatever it is, sounds awesome. Bar. Yeah,
I love that line.
Bar. Absolutely not. He's so offended. Like, no way.
The way he turns and looks at him so slowly. Yeah. How dare you?
And you can tell he's screaming on the inside, like, fuck, somebody knows me.
Yeah. He was totally like dancing it up with his claws at that place. but yeah.
Just, he's doing the cat scratch fever.
Yes, he's doing something that I'll bring up later that we don't hear verbally, but I assume that's what he's doing, movement wise. But yes, then it goes into this dinner. Of course, Luffy is just over the moon because there's all this food. And then they start talking about the ship. He gets on the table at one point. It's just like, this just keeps getting worse and worse. And everyone's like, oh God, here we go. And then just poor Kaya's like, I just wanted some fish. And now you're giving me all this blue shit. And Nami's like, I did like that Nami kind of stuck up for her there, because she's like, it's her birthday. She should be able to eat whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but of course, no, sadly. But yes, that was an interesting scene.
Because like Clawhador also mentioned something about, it is my job to keep track of her dietary needs or something. And then Nami's like, does that mean you get to tell her what to do too?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, fuck yeah, Nami.
Yeah, girl, we take care of each other.
Yeah, you stand up for her. Anyway, continue, Amanda. Sorry.
That was about all I had.
Oh, okay. Whitney,
what did you think of it? I also wrote down Funky Bar, because that struck me funny as well. I love the dining room. It looks so cool. Yeah. It's just so otherworldly. It's got all the plates on the wall.
Very ambient lighting.
Yeah, so too. Interesting. It's very low light. Usopp gets to spin some tales when they're eating the hors d'oeuvres, like, you know, this reminds me of the dragon that I killed and roasted over an open fire. And Luffy's just like, whoa, like he thinks it's, you know, he's just taking it all in. I like that Luffy decided to just come out and say, actually, we're pirates, because you see here even more that Luffy does not even think that anybody would be offended by the idea of somebody being a pirate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, it shouldn't be a problem. I'm going to tell them. But literally everyone else at the table is like, shit, he said it, right? And then him getting on the table and annoying the shit out of Clawhador because he's on the table with his shoes on. I like that too. Mary looks cool. Mary's
yeah. dude. Mary.
But he looks absolutely perfect. I couldn't have imagined him any other way. And, you know, not a huge presence in the show, but for what it was worth, he was, I think he did a good job. That's about it for the dinner party. I mean, it was what it was. It was funny and interesting. You could
it
see
was. It was like
really shocked, like taken aback. Like, is this
guy it was a for very real? Attention-grabbing scene for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And when Nami was taking up for Kaya when she wanted the fish, and Luffy says, "I'll take your fish."
Leave the room.
Damn it, Luffy.
Yeah, come on, Luffy. Come on.
Zoro, I think, had my favorite reaction in this. Because when Luffy was like, "Yeah, we're pirates," like Usopp partially spits out his drink. Nami's eyes just completely bulge out of her head. And Zoro is just sits there and he just takes a massive drink. He's like, shit. His reaction was the best. I loved it. Luffy's scene where he gives his speech about being a pirate and, you know, taking care of the ship and the things they've done and all that stuff and the things they're going to do. Honestly, it was... I don't know what I would think if they did something like that in the anime. Like, I'm wondering if I would feel the same way animated as I did here. This scene was cringy, not in a bad way, but like I'm pretty sure I've physically cringed watching this scene because of
yeah,
how like
secondhand embarrassment.
Exactly, like just seeing Luffy being so straightforward and up front and like standing and walking on the table and like everybody is just in shock with the performance that he is putting on here. But like that's absolutely something Luffy would do. Like it's completely Luffy's character to do something like that. So I really enjoyed it, but I was like, oh my oh my god. Oh my god, it's yeah, I really did enjoy the dinner scene. Like, a lot happened there, a lot of reactions there, a lot of small conversations. And I think it's one of those scenes, and it probably grabs your attention more than any other scene in this episode, I think. I would say that's probably pretty fair. Okay. Helmeppo barges in on Kobe and Garp's game. The Marines discover the sunken boat that Nami, Zoro, and Luffy had been on. Garp decides they will head for the nearest island and decide to allow Kobe to take the lead in getting there. Mary awaits to meet Kaya in the cellar, but instead Clahador arrives. He tries to get Mary to sign the business over to him, but Mary refuses to let Clahador take advantage of Kaya. Clahador does some pussyfooting, pulls out his finger swords, and stabs Mary in the back. Buggy sits tied up in the middle of his tent, and Arlong appears from the shadows. Buggy tries feeding Arlong crap, but he is having none of it. Instead, Buggy defers the situation to get Arlong to focus on Luffy. Whitney, we'll start with you. What did you think of this entire scene with the cellar? And Mary and Arlong.
I liked it a lot. I thought that the cellar scene was really well done. I loved the reveal of the knives behind Mary, which was in the trailer. And I remember mentioning, I can't wait to see Kuro because we knew that was going to be him, but I wanted to see how creepy they could make it. And I think they made it really creepy because when he does attack Mary and kill him, the music, I can't even explain what sound that was, but it was a very like assaulting on your ears, blaring horns, maybe. I don't know, I'm not a music person, but like as far as knowing what sounds are what, but it was so good and creepy. And it was it repeats, I think, some more later on, but like I just love that sound and that music because it drives home how devastating this is getting ready to be, I think, with him. I also really liked Well, I have a question about Kuro's fastness in this show. And I cannot remember, was he fast in the anime like this?
Yeah.
He was kind of like, that was the pussyfoot maneuver that they're not mentioning out loud here.
Well, I knew that he had these moves with the pussyfoot maneuver, but I can't remember him getting from one place to another. And this is another instance, I think, that could be confusing for people who have not watched One Piece, and even for me a little bit, because some of these people seem to have superpowers of some sort, but no devil fruit that I know of that this guy's eaten, but he's super fast. So how is that explained? Or is it just not?
It's just not. You're just,
so
just
as Tom would say, it's a world unlike any other, right?
And we just pretty much,
accept that. And that's fine with me. I just wondered, because, you know, we've talked about it with like Zoro being super strong, and we've talked about it with Shanks and the sea monster, and now with him. That might, because I remember watching this with my husband again, and he was like, wait, did he eat a devil fruit too? So I think that might be a little confusing for people, but I don't know. It's not a huge,
I think that's a fair thought for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a devastating problem that they have, but, and it just kind of cements the fact that this is a weird place. It's not Earth, and some people are just good at things. So, I loved Arlong's intro here. I don't know that the full might of Arlong is known yet, but I think that was kind of on purpose. He seems kind of like a mob boss to me, right? Because he sent his henchmen first, and now he's meeting, and you see Buggy. It reminds me of a mob movie where he's like, come on, Arlong, baby, it's no big deal. You know, he's kind of reasoning with him. And I did not write this quote down, but he says something like, you know, I'll tell you who you should go after. This rubber prick goes by the name of Luffy, or rubber prick in a straw hat. And I just thought that was so funny. He's such a, Buggy strikes me as like one of those Joyzy mob bosses from an old movie. He's like, rubber prick by the name of Luffy, you know? And that just made me laugh a little bit. But I love that intro. And when Arlong comes in and the hip hop music's playing, there's just something about that that to me is just like the music with Kuro. It still makes you know, all this guy's bad news, even though it's a totally different type of music and it hits you a different way. But that intro, the fact that he has an intro, I think is telling that he's going to be very important to what's going on. And again, I think he looked really good. Those practical effects were good. We have yet to see his size and strength fully, but he's at least intimidating, right? He gets up really close to Buggy's face, and I'd be scared of him, for sure. Where did we stop here with this scene?
Right there with Arlong in the tent.
Yeah, that's all I got for that. It's good. It's well done.
I thought it was pretty interesting because so far through these first two episodes, well, not as much in the first episode, but in the second episode and kind of, and definitely in this episode, we see Garp really favoring Kobe here over Helmeppo.
Yeah.
Which in the anime, with where we're at, and we haven't seen a lot of Garp and Kobe and Helmeppo. We've only seen two episodes, and I think it was only like half episodes. But so far, we have not seen Garp favor Kobe like this. I mean, don't get me wrong, he does a lot of stuff with Kobe, but everything he does with Kobe, he also does with Helmeppo too. Like, it's a, you know, but yeah, like, so it's interesting to me to see Garp favoring Kobe so much over Helmeppo. Like, he almost seems to dislike Helmeppo in this, in certain aspects, because, you know, he's like, maybe your dad should have taught you how to tie a knot better, bitch. You know, like, he throws stuff like that in Helmeppo's face, but he doesn't in Garp's or in Kobe's. So I think that's different, and so I'm curious to see how long that goes on, and if Helmeppo ever does gain his favor to where him and Kobe are kind of on the same ground with Garp. The pussyfooting, I thought it looked a little weird. I mean, I think I'm not saying it looked bad. It just, it was odd. It was different. But the way, like, they did the scene and the music going and everything, it definitely felt like a very jump scary kind of scene at times. And like you felt like he could have came around a corner at any second and just jumped out of nowhere and just absolutely murdered Mary. Now, it obviously was not a jump scare because like we got the build up with the knives and everything behind, and then if, wow, that was a great sound effect. Anyway, it was a good scene. I really liked the scene. It's on record, whenever we were talking about the first trailers, I was not a huge fan of the way that Arlong looked in the trailer. That was kind of one of my bigger gripes. I thought that he looked pretty small, especially like when it came to the proportions of his body for his head. Like, I thought his head looked a lot bigger than his body. Seeing this scene and not in the trailer, I loved the way he looked. I thought he looked great. I think the makeup team did a great job. I thought the actor, with the way he was using his voice, was very intimidating. You know, the music plays a part in it as well, and even Buggy's reactions also plays a part in it. But I really, really liked Arlong's entrance here, and I was not sure I would, but he definitely established that Arlong vibe for sure. And Amanda, what about you?
I thought this was super creepy, the whole thing in the cellar with Clawhador and Mary. Rest in pieces, Mary. So sad. In the anime, spoiler, he makes it out alive somehow. Yeah. We all thought he was a goner. Well, at least Whitney and I did. But yeah. In this, clearly he has just bit it after this attack. And yeah, so the pussyfoot maneuver thing, I mean, I'm assuming that's what the fast movements were, because that's, again, in like the anime, when he does that, he calls that out. That's like how everybody does, you know, calls out their fighting moves or whatever. So that's one of the things that he says pretty frequently. And he kind of like, the way it's portrayed is that he's kind of like jumping from one spot to another, almost like teleporty kind of. And I get why they didn't do it here, because if they really went for like the creepy horror movie vibe, and if he said that out of the blue, it would have totally ruined it, I think. So it's fine that he didn't say that there, and I'm just, you know, assuming that that's kind of, that was the decision to make it less comical but still have him move quickly.
See, I think if I'm remembering right, in the anime, I think it was Django that brought it up first. I think Kuro did it, and then Django was like, oh, he's doing the pussy. And like, I think it would have been funny if like they would have had Sham or Butchie say that off to the side. Boss. Yeah,
that could have worked.
Some really good pussy foot in there.
I was a little disappointed to not hear it, but I guess they didn't put it there.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think it absolutely would have taken away from the seriousness that scene was kind of supposed to have there.
Well, but you can guarantee, if I know anybody watches this and has not seen the anime, I'm going to tell them about the pussyfoot maneuver.
Oh yeah, you got to have the pussyfoot. It's a great name for a maneuver.
The best maneuver.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was nice to see Arlong. I mean, I wasn't expecting to see him that soon, but I mean, I guess obviously earlier we saw his henchmen. So,
I figured they will let that sit. I didn't figure Arlong would be in this episode. I figured it'd be another episode or two at least before he came in.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of glad that they're establishing that whole bunch of them this early on, because it does kind of help with, like Whitney was saying earlier, it establishes that there is a bigger villain at play rather than just the ones that we get every week. That's a different one. And then, since we were talking about the music a little bit, I have like a slight tangent on that. It's been so good, I think. Like, the music's really good. And again, to bring up the social media stuff, the One of the composers, it's the two, it's, I wrote their names down. Sonia Belousova and Gianna Ostinelli, they did the score for The Witcher, which I haven't watched, but I think that's where they're probably most known from. But they're posting a ton, or at least the Sonia is, like, almost every day I feel like I see a different clip from her. And they just seem super excited to have worked on this, and I think they've been fans of the anime. And there was an interview that I read where they were both, like, the second that they heard this was being adapted, they were, like, gunning for the job. Like, they really wanted to do it, which is kind of cool. And so, like, the videos that they've been posting is, like, it's really interesting because she's explaining kind of, like, each character, they have a main theme that they wrote. And so she's going into, like, kind of what her interpretation of the character is, and then which instruments they chose based on that kind of interpretation, and then how they write all their different themes and stuff. And they've got, like, a whole video of her playing the piano with this other guy who's doing flamenco guitar for one of the characters. I don't remember if we've gotten to that part yet, but so no, I won't say who it is.
But I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's just so cool. There's, like, there's just so much background stuff, which is really interesting to see. So, but yeah, the score, the whole thing is out on Spotify, and it's, like, 4 hours long. So there's, like, a shit ton of music.
Lovely.
And there's also, like, they just put out, like, a little, it's called Mixtape from Baratier, I think. It's, like, a little short, jazzy kind of separate music from that scene. So
gotcha. Cool.
Yeah,
but I don't always notice music. I've said this before, but I noticed it so much in this show, and I loved it.
Yeah.
It was really good.
They've had great music in this show so far. Definitely. Yeah.
There's a really good one coming up next episode.
Yay! Okay. So Luffy and Zoro sneak out of their rooms to look for the kitchen. As they walk by, Nami walks through the halls, stealing everything that she can to fit in her pillowcase. She hears someone coming and accidentally hides in Kaya's room. While Nami is slightly embarrassed to get caught, Kaya seems to not mind, and that just causes Nami to get defensive over her actions. Kaya invites her to sit down and talk. In the kitchen, Luffy and Zoro come across Usopp. Though they are in different rooms, Usopp and Kaya both deny that they are anything more than friends, but the looks on their faces lead you to think that they both want more. During their midnight snack discussions, Luffy and Usopp discover that they have a mutual connection. Yasopp from Shanks' crew is Usopp's dad. To help Zoro grab a drink, Usopp takes him down to the cellar while Luffy stays in the kitchen to eat Kaya's blue soup. The first question, did Luffy just get poisoned?
Yeah. Like
that's the way I'm taking this. Is yes. Okay, so I'm curious to see how that affects the rest of this island, because obviously we know Luffy's not going to die. But
you'll know that.
I'm taking a pretty good guess.
Okay. Listen, it wasn't a one-to-one adaptation. They made some changes.
You know, you're right. I actually heard that the creators of the live action are hoping for 12 seasons. Like, yeah. isn't that insane?
It's at least going to be six that they've got, like, planned.
Yeah,
for right
they've
now.
Got six planned out right now. But they said to get everything told they want to get told, it'll be 12.
Well, I mean, they do need to hurry because these people are going to age.
I know.
Yeah, that's true.
Probably most of them are in that time period where their aging won't be so apparent. Like, they're not kids, but I mean, I think Inyaki is pretty young. He looks young.
Yeah, I think he's like 21 or something, like 22.
So, I mean,
I think he's pretty young.
Yeah, that can happen. And, you know, there's some, like, the guy who plays Garp is probably older, middle-aged at least. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how they do that, because, like, especially Nami, you know, and maybe Emily Red's gonna age like Jennifer Aniston and just hardly show any age at all.
Plastic surgery, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, and I'm pro plastic surgery. Before anybody thinks I'm being judgmental, you do you.
Yeah,
it makes you feel better. Go for it.
So, like, you know, I could see, like, because, like you said, Inyaki, I don't think he's going to change his looks much from, you know, early 20s to early 30s. Like, I don't think a person changes in looks much, but from 30s to 40s, like Emily Rudd, or maybe Taz, or, and I don't know how old the actor that plays Zorro is, you know,
about going same, from
late 20s to, you know, late 30s, early 40s, I think you would start seeing a difference there. But
Asian don't raisin. I can say that because I'm Asian, I'm not racist.
Wait, what? I missed that.
I said, well, I'll preface this again. I am Asian, so I can say this, but there's a thing that people say, it's just Asian don't raisin. They don't age until you hit like 80 and then you become Asian grandma and you've like, you know, super gray hair, big glasses, hunched over.
Oh my god. Never heard that before.
Nami was finally showing her money hungry side in the scene, like walking through the halls and taking shit.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
You know who didn't take anybody's shit?
Zoro. He did not take anybody's shit. He did do stuff earlier in the episode that I just didn't mention because I'm not gonna bring it up every time anymore. So I'll note it, and whenever I notice him not doing it, then I'll say something.
No idea what you're talking about, but okay.
I loved the conversation with Nami and Kaya. That was a great conversation, and especially because it was interesting to me seeing Nami get super defensive over her actions, and I think it's because she was not expecting Kaya to be like, yeah, that's fine. You know, she was expecting Kaya to be pissed and an awful rich person, and she was doing the exact opposite. And I don't think Nami liked that she was being proven wrong by this extremely nice girl right in front of her. And I thought that their connection and the conversation was growing very quickly. And earlier I mentioned Nami's connection with Zoro, and I was really enjoying it. And that was more on a mutual understanding level of the situation. And here, Nami's connection with Kaya felt like a very emotional and deeper level than we've seen her have a connection with and with anyone in the show. And Nami felt genuinely relaxed and glad to be sitting there with Kaya. And I think that's the first time we've seen Nami's character like happy to be where she's at in this show so far. Mm-hmm. Like, she was completely content being there, and I don't think we've seen that yet.
Yeah, so, and knowing what we know about Nami from the anime, she probably hasn't had any meaningful human contact in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really liked this whole scene for sure. And I mentioned before that the Garp and Kobe scenes were definitely some of my favorite in this whole episode. And so were the Nami and Kaya scenes. I really, really enjoyed them. So, Amanda, what'd you think of these scenes?
I liked the dichotomy of both of their separate conversations that they were having.
Mm-hmm.
And how it kept kind of like cutting back and forth, but it was still, there were connections being made. So like when Nami was asking Kaya, like, oh, are you and Usopp like dating or whatever? And then it was kind of the same conversation that was happening with the guys down in the kitchen. I don't know why I noticed this, but Zoro asked Usopp, was like, oh, is she your girlfriend? But he didn't say it in I didn't think that he said it in a joking or like a teasing, condescending kind of way, because some people are like, oh, you guys dating?
Yeah.
But he was like, he sounded like he was genuinely curious, which is kind of nice that he wasn't like being mean or anything about it.
Yeah.
But I thought Nami's conversation with Kaya was nice, and like, they didn't reduce it down into like, oh, this is the girl talk, like, teehee, let's do our nails and talk about boys or whatever. They had a conversation with more substance, which was nice, and mm-hmm. it kind of felt like like we were saying, Nami probably hasn't had much of just like relationships with other people her age.
I think they even like mentioned anywhere. That. They're like, you don't really know how to be a friend, do you? And I was like, no, like, I guess really I don't.
And I'm
Kaya probably hasn't had much meaningful relationship either, except for Usopp when he comes around, right? And even that's kind of...
That's just barely a relationship. I mean, sitting there talking to a pile of dog crap, you know? Anyway.
It's not a pile of dog crap.
That's a different Usopp.
That's a different Usopp. That's fair.
Yeah, but I mean, it was nice to have both conversations. Then where did we end that scene? They go and find. They go.
It was when Zoro and Usopp go to the cellar. So we haven't gotten to the cellar yet. I think that's that's the next scene is whenever they get to the cellar. So.
Gotcha. We did hear about Luffy knowing Usopp's dad.
Yes.
And he was. Upset. That was kind of sad. He was like, oh, you guys like hung out.
I did kind of feel bad for him. I was like, he is jealous that Luffy has hung out with his dad more than he has. Like, I did feel for him there, because they never did anything like that in the anime, as far as that little, wait, you've hung out with him, like that kind of thing. Like, that whole little emotional bit was not in the anime, and honestly it kind of hit. Like, I was like, oh man, that's really sad.
And when we got to see him slingshotting stuff, which was kind of cool.
Whitney, what about you? What did you think of these scenes?
A lot of the same. I like that they revealed Usopp here, Usopp's dad, and I like the parallel because we've already seen Usopp in action, and he's a really good aim, he's a really good fighter. So obviously some of that got passed down. I like how innocent Usopp can be when he's not, you know, on his game trying to impress. And he says, when they start talking about Kaya, he's like, well, if you were Kaya, would you like me? And I think he's like, I already like you.
He's like, no, that's not.
Yeah,
that's not what I meant.
I mean, the conversation between Nami and Kaya, I agree, was a lot deeper than I expected it to be. I like that Kaya was like, I hope you're not like everybody else and treat me like I'm gonna break because I'm fragile and I'm sick and I don't want any of your pity. And Nami's like, well, you're not gonna get any then from me.
I think that
meant a lot to Kaya, it seemed like, because she's been treated like this for so long now. She's used to everyone treating her like that. So just really good relationship building here.
Absolutely. Zoro and Usopp arrive in the cellar. When they look around, Usopp accidentally trips over Mary's body laying on the ground. Clahadore reveals himself, and Zoro recognizes his finger swords and finally identifies him as Captain Kuro of the Black Cat Pirates. Zoro draws his sword to fight Kuro, but Cham smashes a bottle over his head and knocks him unconscious. Usopp runs to the town to warn everybody, and in the courtyard now, Cham and Buchi dump Zoro and Mary's bodies in the well. Usopp sprints through the village, screaming that the pirates are here, but nobody believes him. A flashback shows that his screaming pirates tradition was started from a good heart. It is now getting him in deep trouble, and the village, more specifically Kaya, is in grave danger. As he sits in the town square, sobbing that nobody will believe him, Kobe and the Marines arrive. Whitney, we'll let you go first. What did you think of the way this episode wrapped up?
So this was the second part that I found almost a little unbelievable. They dump Zoro into this huge well, and he, like, is he dead now? Like, that's a big drop. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to find it really hard to believe if it turns out that he's unhurt at all.
So two responses. One, he landed on Mary.
Yeah, but you're still hitting that. Do you know how far down that well was?
Three, because we didn't hear like a splash or anything.
We don't know how far down it was. It could be 10 feet. I mean, granted, that's still a distance, but that's not that far.
Well, we'll see.
Because he was unconscious too, so it's not like he could have, like, you know, clung onto the side or.
Three responses. We don't know how many other bodies were down there. So he could have had a lot of padding.
That's actually true. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like
the chef and the maid are down there too.
Yeah, all the old staff's down there.
Yeah. The parents.
Kaya's parents.
Even if there were water at the bottom, if you hit water from so high, it's still pretty damaging to your body. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. But I feel like that's gonna hurt.
And my last response is Nami jumped off of Captain Morgan's tower and still lived.
Yeah, that was true. Wild. There's no way.
Okay. All right. You got me.
It's a world unlike any other.
Lest we forget.
That's all any movie needs to do to be unquestioned. Is say at the beginning, it's a world like any other. And just everything else can be just complete bullshit. It's like, okay, they said at the beginning, we're good.
Yeah.
Sorry, Whitney.
That's okay. I like that Usopp escapes from the cellar, first of all, by running away, because we know that Usopp's good at that. But also he goes up like a secret passageway type thing, which is consistent with his character in the live action, that he knows how to sneak through this house and get to Kaya even when they didn't want to let him in. So I like that little touch. And I'm not going to lie, the end of this episode was kind of emotional. Seeing young Usopp with his mom, it was very sudden. Like, I wasn't expecting her to die right then. Mm-hmm. And she did, but it still kind of got me, because that little boy, he did a good job like conveying the emotion there, because it's not like he just bursts into tears or anything, but he was just like almost in shock a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing grown up Usopp, who can't get a response from the village people because they don't believe him. He's the boy who cried pirate. And he says, why won't anybody believe me? And that got me a little bit. The little crack in his voice and the desperation he felt at that point. And I've never been happier to see Kobe. Like, I literally was like cheering, like, yes. Like, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's here. Somebody's here that could believe Usopp and might help. I don't know what he's going to do, because Kobe looks terrified always, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was a good ending. It was a nice little ending. And I like that they're spreading this over more than one episode.
So. Yeah, I do too. Amanda, what did you think?
I liked it a lot. Much of the same thoughts here. It was super upsetting at the end. And I think, like, kind of probably talked about it before, but it feels like I'm able to understand Usopp a bit more, and like why he tells all these stories, and especially seeing that all this happened when he was a kid and his mom passed away and then his dad's not there. So I mean, because sometimes, like, it's easier for people, if you're having a hard time, to live in a fantasy land and like pretend like things are different, so that you don't have to pay attention to whatever is going on that's too difficult, and especially for a kid. So,
sure.
And then it, like, you know, transitions back into present day, and he's looking so broken, just kneeling on the ground there, like crying, felt really bad. I just wanted to give him a hug. He looked so upset. And then similarly, Kobe comes and you're like, yes, Kobe's here. What's he going to do? And he says, I believe you. And he's so earnest when he says it. But he, again, he like looks terrified. So who knows what will happen. But at least he's got somebody in his corner who believes him.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder about Usopp. Can I make a quick point?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Because we don't know when Usopp left his wife or the mom. I don't know if they were married, but is Usopp an asshole? You know what I'm saying? Like, if he knew that Usopp existed, and I feel like at this point, if he did know Usopp existed, he's older now and he never came back. So if he did know about Usopp, I don't know how I feel about Yasop now, right?
He does know about Usopp.
Okay, well, asshole, right?
Yeah.
Like, and she may not have been sick when he left, so he may not have known she was going to die. But if he did, that makes it even worse. Because then you know that your kid has no one. And I understand that the piracy was calling to him or whatever, but like, also, you got a kid. If you know about him, you should do something about it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I wondered about him because I was like trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, well, maybe he didn't know that she was pregnant. Maybe she didn't know she was pregnant when he left. But now I'm kind of, I don't know. I'm not too happy with old Yasop.
I mean, that's another rule of One Piece is nobody has good parents. Like, either their parents are still around and they're, you know, pieces of shit that have abandoned them, like Yasop, or they were a good parent and they're no longer alive. Either one is a possibility, but nobody is still around present that is a good parent, if that makes sense.
Right. This is kind of like a comic. The comic trope.
Yeah. The Usopp scene with his mom, honestly, it didn't really affect me that much. And I think it's because I don't like Usopp, and just
Derek's like, fuck that kid. Yeah. I don't give a shit.
fuck them kids.
And I've already seen it in the anime several times, so I'm like, yeah, I get the story. I know the story.
So, I'm like,
but it's interesting to me though, because like, if that is the reason, okay, I get the story. I know the story. Other scenes in the anime that are very emotional still hit me, and there's another one later in the show that we'll get to at some point that I haven't seen yet, and I'm really
so
hoping.
Curious how you'll feel about that one.
I am too, and I hope that it hits me as much as it does in the anime. I really do. I actually saw something on Instagram. It was like a picture of Emily Rudd's arm.
Oh,
and it was like all bruised up from that scene, which we can talk about that later whenever we actually get there.
I will say, I know what you're talking about. I didn't feel that much in the anime for that because I don't like anime Nami, but in this live action, perhaps that was different.
Gotcha. Okay. We can talk about that scene more when we get there.
Interesting.
But yeah, so like the Usopp backstory thing didn't mess with me much. Kuro should be very thankful to Bucci because Zoro was about to slice and dice his ass. I was really excited because I was like, are we finally gonna, because on Winnie, I think you told me this in either the first episode or maybe it was last week, I can't remember, you're like, Derek, they made a change in the live action you're gonna love, and I cannot remember what it was. No, I don't know what it is. So like, I'm sitting here waiting for this moment, this change that is going to excite me. And I thought that this was it. I was like, when Kuro fight, I am gonna love this. And then Bucci comes up and fucking ruins it. I was like, damn it.
So is this supposed to be like him going down the well? Is this like that scene where the hill that he's trying to run up is covered in oil and he can't get up? Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think I like it better.
Yeah.
Sure. This one doesn't make Nami look like an asshole.
Is this when they were all lost at some point? Like they didn't
kind
know
of
where they were going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, because and then Zoro or Nami pushes Zoro down the hill of oil so he can't get back up.
Nami.
So yeah, Nami was the asshole here, and they took that asshole off of Nami in this. Let's see. So I already said I really liked Sham and Butchie in this episode. The hissing in this scene, though, I was like, oh, God.
They're the black cat pirates.
Again, I was literally like, shit. I was cringing really hard. I was like, that's just really fucking weird.
They're supposed to be cringy though. Like
I know.
Like kind of like how anime versions of them were cringy, I think.
They were.
They were so over the top, and Siom or whatever his name was in the anime was just so much. But that's why I loved him, because he was just so insanely fabulous in the best way, but in the most awful way also. Because these guys obviously think they're formidable, and they may be. We haven't seen too much of their fighting yet, but they think that's intimidating. Even though Zoro would probably be like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. Why are you hissing me?
I was like, that's really weird. But like you just said, it's also very fitting. So, yeah. And then Hobi and the Marines arriving at the end of the episode. I was like, oh,
did
fucking
this happen
shit.
In the anime? Were they there?
It did not. It did not happen in the anime at all. And I was like, this fucking throws a wrench in everything.
Tying like, everything together.
I was like, oh, fuck. I can't. Like, I'm sitting here trying to think of all of the possibilities that could have happened in Syrup Village had Garp been there. Fuck Kobe. Had Garp been there.
Like, and we don't know if Garp's there or not. We only saw.
That's absolutely true.
Because he got to be close.
Some people in the background.
Yeah, we don't know that Garp's there. And Garp, and now that you mention it, Garp did put Kobe in charge of this. So maybe it is just Kobe. Maybe Kobe is the one leading everything.
Which I'm sure he's on the ship.
Yeah. I'm sure he's nearby if he's not there.
But we don't know if he's on the island.
Yeah. Right?
Probably not.
But yeah, that's what popped into my head. I was like, shit is already like getting crazy for me. I really want to see where it goes, having the Marines there amidst this. And the other thing is, all they know is that Usopp is running around screaming pirate. They don't know the backstory.
Yeah.
And all they have is Luffy's flag. So as far as Kobe knows, Luffy is the one that's making Usopp cry and freak out right now. That's what these Marines are expecting. They're here expecting that Luffy is fucking shit up. And so it's going to be interesting and extremely fascinating to see where this goes from here. And I'm really excited. I'm excited for episode 4 next week. Like I said, my favorite episode so far. This was a really well done episode. And I think most of it was the conversations that took place, honestly, because there wasn't necessarily a lot of action. Like it was conversations, and they were just really well done, really well acted, and really well written, I think. Anything else on this episode?
Not for me. Well done.
Alrighty.
Yeah, everything was good. The house was really good. I know we've talked about
it
that.
Was
the
good.
Set was just really cool looking.
Yeah, the set was really good. The one thing that I was like, it's kind of odd, which I guess a budget thing maybe, but and maybe it's just an extremely fucking small town. But all of the scenes in the town were in that same, were on that same L-shaped street. Like, I think they were in town 4 times in this episode, and every single time was on that street. Like,
probably
in that
L
area. Yeah. So that's the one thing I noticed. I was like, does this town only have one road? Which maybe it does. Like, I'm from a small town of only 300 people, and all that's there is a post office. And it's literally just one road going in and out, and that's it. So maybe it is only one road. Maybe it's that small. Mm-hmm. But,
Like Usopp always runs into the same townsperson.
Yes, exactly.
that old man who's like, get off my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Usopp, go fuck yourself. Okay. Quotes. No extra quotes.
Cool. I usually just say all my.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really have anything else.
Alrighty.
You can talk.
And pirate pals.
Well, I had to choose our favorite butler just because I thought he looked so good in this live action. So I've got our anime. I don't know if you can see that, but our anime version with in his little suit with his little yellow turd emoji thingies on his
swirly design.
And of course our live action guy, super handsome, but looks just like the dude.
He did do the glasses thing. We didn't talk about that. He didn't do it as much because we didn't see him as much.
Very true. You're right. Yeah. He did the bottom of his palm lift.
Because we were wondering about that for weeks, it felt like. Because we kept seeing him.
Like, what the fuck is he doing?
Weirdly fixing his glasses. But then we got the reveal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of this, that it's because of the claws.
Very nice. And did he do it with his claws on?
He did.
At the end. Okay. Yeah. So I think that was really good. And so people can hopefully catch that when they watch. Because I don't know if they would notice it or not, but like you said, he did it so much in the anime. I was like, what is this guy? Is this, he's just insane. Like, he's just a weirdo. But yeah, I like, they're so, the people here did their homework, I think. And I'm sure there's other stuff in this show that they brought forward that we don't know yet. Amanda and I don't know yet. But I think they just did a really good job. Even little things like when I talked about how Buggy was posed at the end of the first episode on that chair is from the manga. And I don't remember if that was in the show or not, but I mean,
it wasn't.
Just little things like that, that they've read through this and they've studied it and they involved the creator. So just, I don't know. I just think they're doing a great job.
Yeah, they absolutely are. I think they're doing a fantastic job. And I think this is something that, I mean, it seems like a lot of people that are new to One Piece are really enjoying, but also the, you know, the people that have seen One Piece are also really, really enjoying.
Yeah.
Which, unless you're being extremely picky, which, you know, don't get me wrong, I've had my nitpicks on little bitty things, but I'm definitely not allowing it to take away the great things that have been done in this show. Like, overall, I'm still really, really enjoying this show, for sure.
Yeah, you can accept that they're different entities and
exactly
they do their own thing.
Yeah, I was not expecting it to be, you know, the exact same story. So, you know, I like the way that they're taking it different now. Like I said, I'm super excited to see where this goes with Kobe and the Marines here.
Like, yeah, because I didn't really, it's not that I don't care about the Marines in the anime, but I'm just like, kind of boring. I'm not bored with them in the live action at all. Like I said, when Kobe showed up, I was like, yes, he's here. Like, I don't know what he's going to do. But I mean, I don't know if I would have felt that way in the anime, because I just kind of felt like, oh, we're not on pirates anymore. Right? This is the government. This is the man.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and it kind of feels that, like, especially in the anime, because they're not, at the beginning of the anime in this East Blue arc, the Marines are not in it much. They're in it at the beginning with Zoro and Captain Morgan and all that stuff. And then they're kind of in it at the end because they're there for Arlong Park. And that's about it.
Yeah.
You've got Major Iron Fist Full Body at the Baratier, but he's in it for like 5 seconds. Right. So it's like, and nobody cares. Nobody likes Full Body.
Pink haired guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like in the East Blue, the Marines have a very, very minor presence, and they're all also stupid and assholes. So like, there's no reason that a person would be excited to see them, for sure. But with Garp and Kobe so far in the live action, you've definitely piqued the interest. And well, I will say, at no point in One Piece are you really ever, like in the show overall, you're not really going to be super excited to see Marines most of the time, except for Garp. Garp is always the best. But anyway, we can keep going now. Piece of shit for this episode.
I mean,
Clahador, too obvious.
I feel like even as a butler, if he was not a terrible pirate, he was still kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Kind of. I went with Buggy.
What?
This episode was hard. And I was like, Buggy was just like being a little baby about everything. Like he was screaming and crying, and you know, not like crying physically, like there were not actually tears coming out of his eyes. And then all he's doing, he's like, oh, you should go after Luffy. Oh, you should go after Luffy. Like just trying to
defer. He was trying to save his own life, though, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's like, yeah, he absolutely was. Like,
I don't know that I would do the same.
Huh?
Yeah.
If I was faced with a man shark, I might do the same thing.
I don't know. I'd probably like, what's he? You're supposed to punch him in the nose, right?
No, you're
I'm
supposed
just
to punch
kidding.
him in the gills.
In the gills.
Yeah.
That's right.
That way I can't
But
breathe.
anyway, yeah, I gave it to Buggy for that scene for kind of just being such a baby in that scene, I thought. Yeah, I
And
thought he
that
was.
may have implications for the series as a whole if he's going to continue to show up, because he's obviously set Arlong on the path to Luffy, who probably he had
Which,
no idea Luffy existed, right?
yeah. And granted, Buggy is a baby in the anime as well. So it's fitting.
And he's daddy in the live action.
Baby daddy.
Ew, no, I don't want one of
Okay,
those.
it sounds like we're giving it to Clawhador since it sounds like both of you are wanting Clawhador.
Well, I mean, I know it is on the nose, but he was the piece of shit almost the whole episode. Even, and like I said, even if he wasn't a big reveal pirate, he was still taking over Kaya's life, controlling what she eats, who she sees, what she does, what she says, taking over her finances. That's a piece of shit, in my opinion.
But I mean,
But I see
that's
your point,
true. He's
Debbie.
also supposed to be the piece of shit in that case. So I don't necessarily, he wasn't like holding anyone back, I guess you would say. Like he was doing exactly what his goals were
So, are we saying
and
he was
doing it
being a
well.
piece of shit
Like
to somebody who's not an obvious piece of shit?
Kind of,
That about who
yeah.
else there is to give it
I do.
to? Is that a role?
No, it's not.
Because I guess then.
I was kind of like more, I don't know. I almost felt like I separated Clahador from Kuro. Like, I'm not giving the piece of shit to Kuro, who's murdering people, but yes to the butler for being a
Interesting.
shitty
A shitty
caretaker.
butler. Okay. It's like a so pirate good, butler bad. That is that
Well,
where we're
not, I mean,
going?
not good,
But
I guess.
expected a pirate to be bad,
Okay.
yeah, not so much a caretaker.
So in that case, so we're giving it to Clawhador, not Kuro.
Yeah.
I can get that. I can get behind
Kind of pulling that
that.
out of my ass, but
Yeah, I mean that's fair. Okay, Clawhador it is. And MVPs.
ooh. Man, this is tough for me.
I had two. First one was Luffy. I really liked several of his like lines and little speeches that he was giving and how understanding he was. I already talked about the scene with the ship. I'm talking about how the ship is a part of the crew. It's not just a ship, and we have to get it the right way. I loved that scene. I think that speaks a lot to Luffy's character. And Nami is obviously getting a better glimpse of that. And like I already mentioned, the closet scene with him understanding Kaya and what she's going through just from standing in a room like that. And Kaya's not even in the room, and he's still getting a better understanding. And it's not like he was in her bedroom either, where he's seeing all of her shit. Like, this is just other shit. But he still is understanding Kaya. So, like, I thought Luffy's character as a whole grew a lot in this episode. And the other one was Garp. I really, really liked the scenes with Garp and Kobe in on the ship. And I liked the way that he was kind of using the game to help Kobe realize the potential that he actually has. So those two are my nominations. I mean,
I mean, I think Garp is a decent one. I do like that portion of that whole scene with him and Kobe. Mm-hmm. And he does kind of move the plot along at the end because he has Kobe go to Syrup Village.
I feel like I could get behind Garp because I feel like he is helping Kobe realize, and this is going to sound so shitty, but he's helping him realize his real dream of being a good Marine, because he's teaching him that, like, you don't always need to overthink everything. Just do what you think is best and go for it. And he's teaching him already that just because you come from a Marine family or you know how this works doesn't mean you're automatically a good Marine, right? Because he cuts Helmeppo down pretty quickly. And I think part of that stems from his hatred of Axan Morgan and knowing that he was a shitty Marine and he was a shitty leader. And it seems to me like Garp, and I know I already mentioned I don't know what his motivations are, so I could be wrong, but it seems like he might be genuine here in doing his job correctly and having like a good work ethic as a Marine. So I think that his disdain for Axan Morgan is kind of leading into his disdain for Helmeppo, and he sees something in Kobe that may not have experience and may not have what you would expect a Marine to be yet, but he sees something in him that he maybe has for himself and thinks that he'll be a good Marine one day, which is what I'm hoping his motivation is in all of his little quiet, you know, get-togethers with Kobe that he's been having. So I feel like I could get behind Garp with this, because otherwise, like, Usopp was pretty helpful, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
I think the only other thing I might say would be Nami, just because of the times that she stuck up for Kaya.
I could get behind Nami.
Conversation that they had. She did. I mean, because even at the end of that, she was like, "Hey, it's not my place, but don't take shit from anybody." Basically.
Yeah.
I did really like that. Nami was great in this episode for sure. This is a rough one.
Yeah.
Damn.
Zoro for just going straight for the cocktails.
Hey.
And just
falling down a well.
Taking that long swig after Luffy's like, "We're pirates."
Here we go.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Nami and Garp probably are the top two here. Cause yeah, she does stick for Kaya up a lot. And honestly, in this episode, she's really the only one that does it. Nobody else stands up to Kuro like she does. Like, yeah. Luffy, Zoro, Usopp, they kind of just stand there and watch it. And Nami's like, "No, fuck that. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to put up with this shit of you taking advantage of a girl that I don't even know."
And it's because Nami knows what it's like to have someone force her to do something she doesn't want to do and to rule everything she does. And she's like, "No, I may have to live with this nightmare, but I'm not going to stand by and let another girl suffer through this." Right.
And even the fact too, and the other thing that adds an extra layer to it is the fact that Kaya is the rich girl that Nami can't stand.
Yeah.
Nami is looking past that to defend her.
All honestly, right, Nami.
I'm sitting here thinking I feel like a Nami. Yeah. Ugh. We're just talking ourselves into it.
What has happened to me?
I know.
Is this the second time she's gotten it? In the live action?
Oh, no. Not in the live action.
At all, I don't think.
No.
Okay.
So far in the live action, all we've given it to is Shanks and Buggy were the first two.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I know. Yeah. So this is even the first first time Nami gets it, and she is still leading in the MVP's award.
She would just make up her damn mind.
It still cracks me up because nobody gets more hate than Nami, but also nobody gets the MVP's award more than Nami.
Because when she does something good, she does it big, right?
She does.
So that saves her ass a little bit, I guess.
He absolutely does. That's awesome. I love it.
It's still early. It's still early in the live action. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we'll
We could
see.
change our minds again.
That's good. She won't. All right. Anything else before we wrap it?
Go watch episode four.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep, right now, because I'm gonna be doing that as soon as we're done recording for sure. So you can follow the show on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok at Going Merry Pod. And you can also support the show by leaving a 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice. It really goes a long way with getting the show out there, and it's very much appreciated. We all love to see the feedback that we get. So let us know what you're thinking of the show. Let us know who you would give the piece of shit and MVP awards to. And just let us know, are you thinking about starting the live action or the anime if you haven't seen it or whatever. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. So I hope you all have a great rest of your week. See
Bye.
ya.